Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. Yeah, that's how we do it. I feel like we've had one too many beers already. Kevin, you just had water. What's going on with you? Are you dehydrated?
That's not water.
Yeah,
that's vodka.
I felt dehydrated.
Yeah. So we are a weekly podcast. That's for the new listeners. We list and discuss our top five favorite picks of whatever weekly podcast weekly topic we're talking about. Fuck, man.
We're going to talk about our favorite podcast
today. Guys,
this is the first time I'm here, and this is how we start.
I know. I am like 3-4 beers in, and I had two
and
earlier.
You started to make an old fashioned.
Yes. No, and I stopped. We basically pick a film topic, and then we list our top five favorite films, actors, actresses, film pets. We still haven't done that unless we will soon. We teased it last week, but this week we may get more in depth about these.
I don't even
pets.
Know what you're alluding to.
All right, we're usually four hosts, but today we're three and a guest host. So today it's myself, Ricardo,
Adam Scott,
Kevin,
and we have our guest host. Who is it? Who is it?
Brandon Bennett.
That's what we did. Not related to Brand. Who's it? Bennett Miller. Completely different guy. People are like, is he related to Bennett Miller?
Why would they ask that?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Because they like,
there's a lot of first name Bennetts I am.
No relation to that Bennett Miller.
Tony Bennett.
No.
Anybody famous?
I was excited about. Moore is my mother's maiden name, so forever I would tell people Roger Moore, Demi Moore, and that's all, right?
Yeah. Mandy Moore?
Yeah.
This is before Mandy Moore.
Yeah.
I would now, though. Thank you.
Yeah. I would say Mandy Moore. Like, yeah, I'm her second cousin. Yeah. She puts out. And wow. Be like, whoa, that's really weird. But anyway, let's get to it before we have more incest jokes.
Cousin you're talking about.
I don't appreciate that. Has anybody seen anything in theaters? Brandon, what did you see in theaters last?
I feel like the thing I'll bring up is something you guys have already tackled.
Well, let us know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Prometheus.
I think we... No, have we talked about
it? We talked about it.
We did talk about it.
Well, let's talk about it some more. Because I know Brian with a Y. Fucking have a fit if we don't talk about it.
If you want him to have a fit, talk about how much you loved it.
Yes.
Oh, God. I mean, I think my favorite part was how it tied into the Alien universe so seamlessly. Yeah. Like, it was like this was written actually before the first. It was like the Star Wars thing where he started with Episode 4, but all the pieces were there for the others.
It's like they found it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Buried treasure.
No, I just think I did not have. Normally, I can hear some negative things, even not knowing any specifics and, you know, not really expect anything, because there's a lot of times when I just enjoy the hell out of it. But I just found this to be such a fascinating failure. Yeah. Like, I know it can get tiresome to talk about bad things about a thing over and over and over again, but I just think this one is so interesting because I felt like all the pieces were there for something other than what is on. Like, I feel like there's a scene missing in between every scene of the movie.
Yeah. I hope there's a director's cut that has stuff missing.
But this is supposed to be the director's cut.
Yeah, that's supposed to be his director's cut.
Well, maybe there's a producer's cut.
This is my director's cut.
I like your Ridley Scott.
Yeah, it's really authentic. I feel like nowadays how I go into movies is I take – this is the equation I came up with. I take the Rotten Tomatoes.
Wait, I was told there would be no math.
Well, there is today.
Damn it.
I take the Rotten Tomatoes rating, and whatever number that is, I subtract 15, and that's the expectations I go in with. So you know that's a percentage of expectations. So I'm like, oh, whatever you know number Prometheus had, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go in with lower than that expectations, and it kind of worked out because I didn't care either way. I don't give a shit.
But it starts off so amazingly.
It does.
It's with David and like him spending time on the ship.
Yeah.
And all of that is incredible. And I love him throughout the whole thing, even though I don't understand why he does some things later on, which is why I feel like there's a scene missing that explains all that.
Yeah.
Because he just has the one conversation with you guys are okay with me.
Spoiler alert.
Spilling
spoiler
alert.
Yeah. Okay. I don't even. You can spoil the shit out of this movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I guess it doesn't. Like I said, I feel like half of it's missing, so it doesn't make any sense anyway. There's just the one conversation he has with old guy Pierce, and with Wayland, and then that is supposed to, I guess, explain everything else he does in the movie. Like, they already knew what was there, so he's going to go ahead and execute all of these things, like the ship and all of that. He just goes and does it, and I don't understand exactly why. I don't understand why anyone does anything. The geologist is a badass, and then he runs screaming from a dead body. And then the guy who's these brilliant scientists all just take off their helmet. And I feel like all that's nitpicking, but it just like adds up to so much nonsense to me.
Yeah. This is what I wish. I wish Ridley Scott halfway through it would have said, you know what? This movie may not be the best movie that I've directed. And just called Ice Cube. So you could say, there's this space worm's this big. That's it. That's all I wanted him to say. Ice Cube saying there's snakes out here this big. That's it. And that would have been at least
Samuel Jackson?
Ice Cube. Anaconda.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anaconda.
Yeah. I was going to say, because Ice Cube in space just makes me think of Ghosts of Mars.
Well, that too.
Which, hey,
you wrote
what?
A negative one.
Mars,
what's up with the negative one?
Now there's a movie that
that's for me. That's for me, because I missed Anaconda.
Ghosts of Mars has some competition for worst sci-fi movies now.
Oh, okay.
Prometheus, Ghost of Mars.
I like this rating system. Brandon, he brought a notepad and he just wrote negative one.
It's an honesty system. I missed Anaconda.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Oh, the reference?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it looks beautiful.
It does.
It looks immaculate.
The 3D, really, I forgot it was in 3D like 10 minutes into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, I don't know, is that good or bad?
It's good because it's seamless. Like, it's not like, oh, wow, that's... Something's going at the screen.
Like
it's
a score,
just,
right? It just added something
yeah.
to
that. It just added something that I don't know if I would have liked it as much as if I would have watched it in regular 2D.
Yeah. And then the tying in to the Alien universe, it just... Because I don't know. Yeah. It's a dead horse, right?
Yeah. we're like, damn you, dead horse. What? Anything else you've seen?
I finally watched Sherlock Holmes' Game of Shadows.
How did you like that?
I don't
think it warrants anything beyond
okay.
that.
Okay. The fact just, that it was missing
that happened.
Them doing shit. Like it was missing the solving of a case.
Yeah, like it I know that they felt like, oh, we're just gonna drop you right into this moving train that's our you know, his investigation into Moriarty, but then that leaves me no room to really care about why Moriarty I don't understand why he's a bad guy necessarily, other than being kind of I guess the progenitor to corporate
The corporate system.
Yeah, the military industrial complex. He's the first. He's the first worker in the military industrial complex.
Also, looking back, it's just the same story from Captain America, but told poorly.
Yeah.
With like, except it's Moriarty instead of Red Skull.
Yeah.
Just watch Captain America instead.
And he was good. I mean, I love Jared Harris.
Yeah, like that's the thing. It's great actors. It's just I don't like the movie. Yeah.
Jared Harris was badass in Mad Men.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of this season.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that. He's badass.
Yeah.
All right, so anything else you saw? Nothing?
No, nothing.
Does anybody have any streams of the week that they'd like to talk about? Anything you've seen on Netflix streaming that rattles your head? That you're like, oh, I have to talk about this film.
Sleepaway Camp 2.
Is it on
No,
Shane?
I'm just kidding. It is, but don't watch it.
What did I just see that was on? There was a new. There's a new Kevin Smith thing.
Spoilers?
No. It was like something
about
hell.
Red State.
Something about hell.
It's the Cure Night is after Red State.
Red State, like burning in hell or something.
Burning in hell. Yeah.
It's the one where he talks about how much of a jerk Bruce Willis is for some reason.
Yeah. And it was pretty interesting. And he had some interesting things to say about filmmaking that I enjoyed. So we could check that out. And pretty entertaining. Did he start losing weight? Did I see a picture of him? Like
He lost some weight, right?
I feel like that guy's like one cheeseburger away from just like fucking collapsing. He's really every time he's doing stand up, like he's just like dripping with sweat, and I'm like, man, this guy's
still loves the jerseys though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think wearing a hockey jersey is conducive to
in the chance.
Staying cool.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised they breathe really well.
Yeah. It's weird how jerseys never went out of style, right?
No.
Hockey jerseys. They've always been cool.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Okay.
No, they haven't.
Yeah,
I mean,
you say so.
People still wear jerseys. All right. So, should we get into it? What's going on?
Let's get into the list. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's gangbang this thing.
Wow. I don't know about that. And I'm out. I'll see you guys later.
All right. Let's do it. Brandon's going to start us off.
All right. So, number five, I feel like our mutual friend Brian
did we even mention what topic we're talking about?
We're talking about movies.
We're talking about foreign films. Sorry, guys. I don't know if I mentioned it. I'm sure when you downloaded it, you saw that it was foreign films, but we're talking about our favorite foreign films. Sorry, Ben.
That's okay. So, number five, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Nice.
So you're not going with the Academy rules on foreign film?
No. I mean, it requires an international distributor, right? That should be maybe the rule for foreign. It is international.
Yeah.
There's plenty of subtitles.
Yep.
And when I saw it, the Cockney in Lock, Stock is... I didn't get it until I saw it a second time.
They have some very thick accents. I was just giving you shit.
No, I know, because it's all in English. But I saw it at a young age, and it's a nice reminder of what Guy Ritchie might be able to do at some point again.
Not Game of Shadows.
I feel like Lock, Stock is like his El Mariachi. Because then Snatch, he got money and made Desperado.
Yeah.
With all the same people. And
we'll see, but I prefer Snatch and Desperado to El Mariachi and Lock, Stock.
Really?
Yep. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I like Snatch a little better.
I feel like he honed some of the stuff that he started in Lock, Stock, which then later became horrible to watch. You know, all the super slowed motion and sped up stuff. Like, you know, the boxing scene in Snatch is great, but he uses it lightly here to introduce certain characters. And I miss this Jason Statham a lot.
Yeah.
You don't want him just doing kung fu and kicking the shit out of everything and everyone in the room?
And just driving and doing some crazy stuff.
Throwing knives. BMWs.
Because he does all of that in here, too, but he's also really funny at the same time.
And humping things for static electricity.
Yes.
Come on.
Oh, do those count as foreign movies? They're on my list right now. Crank 1 and 2.
They are highly entertaining. I'm like, how are they going to top? How is he going to get more static electricity? Oh, he's going to hump the old lady.
He falls from a plane. And wakes up in the sequel.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
It works for me. Yeah. It's a good pick. I dig it.
It's okay. The car broke his fall.
All right. So good start. It's still in movie in English, but you're right. It is a foreign film. I didn't take that into account. I wish I would have done that.
I feel like that would have just made this even harder.
Yeah, I guess you're right. For my number five, I picked a movie from 2007, and I picked The Diving Bell and The Butterfly.
Nice.
Really, really cool movie. It's Julian Schnabel.
How do you say his name again?
Schnabel. But I really dig it. It's slow at times, which I dig. And the cinematography... Huh?
The stillness.
The stillness. Oh, yeah. And the cinematography is really amazing. It's what's his name? Spielberg cinematographer. This was, I think, one of the first movies he kind of left the Spielberg camp for. And it's really well shot. And I love the acting. The guy who plays the lead is amazing. And
who plays? It's not Vincent Cassel, is it?
No. It's Matthew Amalric, I think is pronounced.
The bad guy from Quantum of Solace.
Yes. Yep. That really wasn't a bad guy.
He's also in, A Christmas Story?
Yeah.
Tale?
Christmas Tale.
Yes.
French movie? He's good.
Yeah, he's really good.
Basically everything I've seen him in, I really like him.
Yeah. And basically it's the guy that, magazine editor, he's involved. He has an aneurysm, I think, and he basically, all he has left is...
I thought it was a stroke.
It's a stroke, yeah. Stroke, I think you're right, yeah. And the only thing he could move is his little eyelid. And he's like...
Stop doing that.
Is it freaking you out?
Stop blinking at me.
And he basically narrates this whole book, his memoir, through just blinking, and it's crazy.
Have you seen how they do it? I don't know if they do that. I haven't seen, actually, Diving Bell and the Butterfly. But do they do it in the movie where they show how people who can only move, like who can, you know, twitch one appendage or however they communicate, how they do that, how they figure out speech?
Yeah, they kind of go into it a little bit, and like the nurse helps them. And, like,
yeah, and it's like a screen with like a crossword where like you go, he tells you to go like down four spaces and then write three, and then it's a letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is
a whole book.
She says the alphabet.
Yeah.
And tells him to blink when to stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's just she's kind of like living T9, where he gets so many letters and she guesses what he's trying to say, and then it's like blink once for yes and twice for no.
Yeah. So it's kind of more like charades with the eye. Not charades. Where it's like Hangman, but with a guy who can only blink. And what's cool is a lot of the movie too is told. It's the point of view of his point of view. So you see the blinking. So you see him through the one eye, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, the cinematography is amazing. The way when you see the first person point of view of having his bad eye sewn shut.
Yeah,
that's freaky.
Yes,
and just trippy how they do that. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I dig like the flashbacks of him, like, you know, going out with the girl, and then like it's really.
I love all the flashes of the. Where like he's picturing himself, like the literal metaphor, and stuck in the diving suit beneath the water.
Yes.
It's a gorgeous movie.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're walking through Lourdes, or how Lourdes, however you say it.
Yes. Oh man, now I want to see this again. Now, damn you guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's my number five.
Okay, my number five is from 2003, and it's Old Boy.
Ooh.
This movie, when I saw it, definitely sparked my interest more, definitely inspired me to be a filmmaker. It's a crazy, fucked up, awesome story. The lead actor is amazing.
Wait, you haven't even been drinking and you're slurring your words.
No, well, I feel like we're
this is actually vodka.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's different. The way the story is kind of told, just like the basis of the story and kind of why this guy gets kidnapped and held captive for so long and then just released, and kind of what they want, how they're kind of just pushing him in this direction so they can tell really this really fucked up story. But the action sequences are fantastic. It's it's just an awesome movie.
That was on every one of my lists except the one that I went with. It's in the honorable mentions.
That's awesome.
But I just rewatched it recently, and it's like the opening scene,
yes.
The only thing you get of him actually, Desu, like who he is the opening scene where he's just filthy drunk
in the
yelling at police
station.
Officers. Yeah, yeah, getting into fights. And that's all the sympathy you have for this guy. So then the movie has to take an asshole and like makes you feel sympathetic for
exactly.
him and like, you know, put him through hell. And yeah, and just the way it jumps right into all of that and just the way it's told from that point on is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just the ending is so Greek.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
It's, it is very tragic, and it is very Greek. And you don't see that a lot in a lot of films these days. And I just love what Chan Wook Park did with the story.
Yeah, not a lot of self mutilation in the dramas.
Yeah. What, I wonder how they're going to do this for the remake.
Spike Lee. Who's the lead?
It's Josh Brolin.
Sorry. I like Josh Brolin. I don't know. I guess that might have been my recoil at the idea of a remake of something that's so young anyway.
Yeah.
And something that kind of translates. I mean, I don't think there's anything really specifically, other than maybe some senses of shame, that's specifically Korean about it.
Yeah. I just want to know, what is he going to eat a squid?
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, that would be amazing if Josh Brolin ate
a
squid.
But what's the American equivalent?
Yeah, what's the American equivalent?
Like,
I want to eat something living.
Yeah, where do you go and you say when you eat something that's alive?
Yeah, it's
veal.
Florida overpass.
Florida.
Yeah, I heard he's going to play it like Tommy Lee Jones. Hopefully that works out. Good pick though. I dig it. And that whole fight scene is pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Really long
take. The hammer fight scene.
Yeah, the way it's shot.
Yeah. Really well done. Really well done.
Yeah. This was one of those movies where it was just like, let's just go. I don't know what this is. Let's go see it.
Yeah.
He's got a hammer. Let's go see what happens with that hammer.
Yeah, and he's punching a wall.
Yeah.
And there was ants crawling on his face. That's all I remember from the trailer.
And it looks like he specifically goes for the hammer.
Yeah.
Like when he's fishing in the closet for something, it looks like he's just looking for the hammer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great pick. Definitely honorable mention.
Cool.
Definitely much darker than my number five, which is from 1970. And I don't know if this was on mic, but here's my Antoine Doinel movie. For you, Brandon, Bed and Board. It's the third film in the series. I mean, I guess if you're not including Antoine and Colette, which is a short film. I mean, I feel like I should have Stolen Kisses because it is my favorite of the Antoine Doinel series, but I did have that on romantic comedies already. But I love them all. This is also very good. This is once Antoine and Christine are married, and it's just Truffaut being awesome in this sort of following this semi-autobiographical character still. And I love it. It's fun. It's cute. It's sweet. It's got crazy stuff with his Japanese mistress. And the scene where Christine is making fun of Antoine with their kid, talking about how many items he has to take into the bathroom with him to keep himself occupied while he's in there. It's fun. It's cute. And it's hilarious. And no fights in hallways with hammers and eating mm-hmm. squids. But I love it. And I feel like I'm on NPR.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and move it on to you, Brandon.
For sure.
Antoine Donnell, it's a good choice, Adam.
Thank you. Yeah, you laugh at your own joke.
Well, you can give me this one. Okay, we're on number four, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, number four, it's recent, but it's still valid. El Bui. It's a documentary. It's a Spanish documentary, El Bui, Cooking in Progress. And it's a documentary that follow. I don't know. Do you guys know?
It's on Netflix, right?
It's on, yeah, Netflix. It's on Netflix. I haven't watched it, but I saw it.
Do you guys know anything about El Bui? It's a restaurant in, I think it's in like the Catalan area of Spain.
Okay.
Like south, it's south of Barcelona anyway, but run by Fran Adrià. He's the guy who started the, you know, kind of the big push of molecular gastronomy, but that ended up being kind of something different than what it is. And so this documentary follows them. The restaurant, when it was open, it's not open anymore. It would be open for 6 months, and then they would go back to the lab in Barcelona for 6 months and then make the menu and just experiment for the next season.
Oh, wow.
And so this just follows them. It's a fly-on-the-wall documentary, so it's just filming them during both periods, the first to the lab in Barcelona and then back at the restaurant. And it's just I have a fascination with watching, even like I hate motorcycles, right? I despise motorcycles when they go by me. I don't see how anyone, well, I can see how people would have fun with them, but I would find it terrifying. And I loved American Chopper.
Okay.
Because it was people who were really, even though I hate the thing that they're building, they're people that are really talented
yeah.
building a thing, like, creatively. And so it was fascinating for me to watch, like, you know, Chopped on the Food Network, just stuff where it's people who are really good at something showing that, and yeah. this is, like, the ultimate version of that. And it's just watching them, you know, just extract, like, they'll go to the market and buy, like, two ingredients, and they'll spend a week just, like, pulling it apart. You know, and preparing it in different ways and, you know, figuring things out and building upon building. And it, and then at the end of the movie, like they show, he takes photographs of everything and they record every step of the process. And then at the end, they go by and show you the menu, like, you know, one by one. And it's just a nice, it's just great. A few things, like I'll turn it on, especially, I know this is the American in me, but things that are subtitled, I have to be in a mood where like, I feel like sitting down and watching a movie, you know,
right.
but this immediately,
well, you have to give it more of your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, but this, I was immediately drawn in and it's great. You should check it out.
You've passed it on. I definitely want to check it out now.
Me too.
It's been popping up as a recommendation. Like, what is this movie they keep telling me to watch? I just want to watch Breaking Bad.
I know. And now, do you like the type of like restaurants? Do you seek that out?
Yeah, I haven't been. Like the closest thing in town would be the Bazaar.
Yeah, I've been there.
Jose Andres' place.
Have you been?
I haven't been yet. I wanted to do the Som thing, which is the side room where it is the whole tasting menu. It's like 30 little, you know, courses.
Yeah.
And I haven't done either of them. But
it's interesting. I went there like a year and a half ago, something like that. And it's really interesting. And I mean, you definitely got to have some cash to go in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's definitely like an experience. And that's what I like. I mean, I'm a big eater. I love, as you can see by my rotund weight. Yeah. I love fucking eating. I love, that's like one of the greatest joys of just life. Like,
oh, yeah.
Talking to people, like, especially when you're like eating with somebody. And Kevin and I have been doing this thing where we go eat every Monday. And we're
sometimes, I do that too.
We go eat together, but we go a little inebriated, you know, and then we enjoy the food and there's like talking and it's just something really cool about like getting to talk to somebody and eating. And I think that's why Doug did it for five with the Jon Favreau show.
Because
it was just something really cool and just interesting about just eating and talking to people. And Bazaar is definitely amazing. I went with like, It was like five of us, and it was really cool. And even the drinks are like that. Like, the drinks are like, instead of sugar, they'll make it with cotton candy. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
And it is a high bar of pretension. I mean, I'm not going to joke around that it is not the most pompous, pretentious thing you could possibly ever experience.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that some of it isn't just exquisite.
Yeah.
And
that's
what I think this... That's why I really like the documentary, because it shows them in the process of it and, you know, showing what the real idea behind it is, which is really just a performance art piece that you eat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just saw the Anthony.
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, I saw the Anthony Bourdain episode where he goes and he talks to the guy from Bazaar, the owner of Bazaar.
Yeah,
but he goes to his restaurant in Spain, the original, and like the stuff they're eating is like amazing and like really like. It's kind of a shame that you have to eat it because it's like so beautiful what you're looking at, and yeah. it is an art piece that you're eating literally. Mm-hmm. So
it should just make me want to watch The Trip again.
Yes.
Yes.
No. No. Good. No. but yeah, cool. And you said it's streaming, right?
Yeah.
Oh fuck! Now I gotta watch it. All right. Down to my number four. I picked a movie from 2001. It's a movie called Read My Lips. It's a guy. It's the director. I'm gonna butcher his name. Jacques Audiard. He did A Prophet. The Beat My Heart Skipped.
Yeah.
What was the last one he did? A Prophet, I guess, was the most
that was his
prolific
last one. Yeah.
The last, yeah, prolific one. And but I love all this guy's movies. And this is the first movie I watched. This is way before The Prophet. This is like when this movie first came out. Read My Lips is really cool because I'm a huge fan of like con movies and like ex-con, like just like. The criminal element, that's always, like, for some reason resonated in me. Like, some of my favorite movies are, like, crime dramas. And this is what it is. This movie is really great. It's Vincent Cassell playing an ex-con, and he's kind of on parole. And he goes to work at this, like, mundane office. And he meets this girl who kind of is a loner. Like, everyone kind of treats her like shit because she's deaf. And she reads lips. And he kind of, like, they kind of fall in love. But he also they fall in love after the fact that he tries to take advantage of her in the way that he wants to commit a crime, but he wants her to read somebody's lips for him. So she's got binoculars, and so
it's like that episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah. And he eventually falls in love with her, and it's a really great love story. And the way that when you go into her point of view, like there's no audio; it's just like you're seeing the lips, and then you're seeing the translation in words, the subtitles. Sorry. And I couldn't think of the fucking word.
Go finish your beer.
The subtitle.
Go finish your beer.
When you start snapping, you fucking lost it. And it's
especially
really
if you're talking to a deaf person.
I know. And so it's just really well done. It's a great crime drama. And it's really simple. It's not like there's no big heist. It's just very simple and it's really well told. And it's really kind of endearing too, the fact that, you know, they're kind of both kind of like misfits. Like no one wants to hang out with him because he's an ex-con, and no one wants to hang out with her because she's kind of like, she's deaf. So it's them finding each other and falling in love. So that is my number four.
It's a good one. My number four is from 1957, and it's Wild Strawberries.
Ooh, thank you.
We're going there.
You're welcome.
Because that I was having a really tough time not having that on here.
Well, I'm glad that I put it on here then.
Next on pressure.
This movie, this is definitely my favorite Bergman film that I've seen. I guess the one thing that I realized while making this list is I haven't seen a lot of, I need to watch more foreign films. But I just love the plot, the story of someone older kind of reflecting on their life and kind of where they are now and kind of all the relationships that they've kind of ruined and how they kind of are empty. Where they are, they're about to get this hot, huge acclaim and went and getting like an award, but he's kind of just empty in his life, with all his relationships with his family and love and all that. And it's the way it's done and how he kind of reflects on life by hanging out with a group of young kids, but then also just kind of actually going back and thinking of a time in his life when he had a love that was kind of taken from him. It's really well done. And the lead actor, Victor Strom, or what, it's something sweet, Finnish, Swedish, whatever.
Strom.
Yes. That's
perfect.
That's perfect.
Guten.
But
this is going to be our most, I just want to apologize to everybody listening. This is going to be our most pretentious podcast yet.
I thought you were going to say our most racist podcast.
That too.
It could possibly be that as well.
Possibly both. Hopefully. Pretentious and racist would be a great combination.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to drink more of my beer.
but yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah. I think I told you guys how when I was a teenager, I was always confused Igmar Bergman and Ingrid.
Ingrid. Yes.
I was like, who is this, a girl or a guy? Who the hell is this?
This is one of, I feel like there are two categories of Ingmar Bergman films. The ones I love immediately and the ones I learned to love over time. And this was one of the ones that I loved immediately.
Yeah.
Like just right away. It's great. I love the little trip that they take.
Yes.
They're all, it's just such a great movie.
I do like the ones that you figure out later. You're literally like, it's years later and you're like, oh, that's what that meant.
I mean, it's not even necessarily that I figure it out later. It's just that I appreciate it the more the time has gone by, or with the repeat viewing.
Viewings, yeah, like definitely.
Virgin Spring or Smiles of a Summer Night, I was indifferent about it first, but after watching them again and sort of spending some time with the films, I appreciate them a lot more.
Hmm.
But Wild Strawberries was a great, great film right off the bat for me.
Yeah.
Where am I now? Where did I go? Okay.
Four.
So my number four is from 1995. Since I already had Amelie on here, I figured I'd go with one of his other movies, The City of Lost Children.
Yes.
I mean, so much going on in this film. It's just such an awesome sort of steampunky sci-fi
where the world fell in love with Ron Perlman.
I already love Ron Perlman. Who didn't love
Strong
Ron
man with a big heart.
with Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. Dominic Pignon, all the crazy little characters, and what he's playing, Dominic Pignon playing like four or five different clones or whatever. Yeah. It's just such a fun movie. It's one of those movies, I remember seeing it before I saw Amelie, but I just didn't know what it was about or who it was or what was going on. It was just interesting. There's something about it that you just kind of get sucked in and you want to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's so fun and so bizarre. And then the relationship, the interaction between Ron Perlman and Judith Vitte, this little girl, and they worked so well together. Ron Perlman, he's this Hulk of a man, but he has such a childlike quality to his performance, especially when interacting with her. And it's just such a great movie, and I love it.
Yeah, I love this director a lot. Like Kevin and I got to see, remember that double feature we saw?
Yeah, we saw Delicatessen and Amelie with him doing a Q&A.
And it was really, I had never seen Bastards. Delicatessen, and it I was love that so, one too. It was really
tough
good.
To pick between these two.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen a movie of his that I didn't like.
What about Alien Resurrection?
Alien Resurrection.
I like Alien Resurrection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like the one guy. I don't know what to tell you.
Mind you, I did rewatch it recently, and I sat through the entire thing. So, I didn't
see Micmacs?
I didn't see Micmacs.
I haven't seen Micmacs.
Micmacs was it's good, but I wouldn't put it up. It's enjoyable. I'd watch it again, but
that's streaming, I think, too.
I wouldn't put it up there with like his other films.
I gotta check it out. Still. Yeah, but I love this.
It's not
children.
Would you say it's the last one to watch if you were making a list of his movies to watch?
Alien Resurrection. Yeah, Alien.
Yeah, that's the last one to watch. Yeah, okay. One to watch, but, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the one where you don't have to read subtitles.
That's true.
You want to watch that first.
But you don't have to. Now, Ricardo, is this one better with subtitles on, though?
You know what? I haven't seen this. I was just talking about this before we started recording, that something really fun if you want to do and have a couple beers, put yourself a crappy movie like Transformers, and you switch it to Spanish or French, but with English subtitles. Much better film.
See, and what I was going to say about that
makes it classy.
Is that like the difference between dubbed and subbed? When you don't understand what someone's saying, I feel like they seem like better actors.
Yes.
And what they're saying is so much more profound.
Yes.
Because you're almost reading it, you know, in your own voice. So you're putting whatever inflection like you need on it for whatever the scene is. So every time you watch a Japanese film with subtitles, everything just sounds so poetic and profound. Even Transformers.
Yeah, I actually, a movie that I actually liked, and I literally just watched it this weekend. Sometimes at work, we get a little bored, and we'll do that. And people will be like, why are you watching this in French? It's like, just read the subtitles. Don't be a jackass. We just watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes in French, but with the English subtitles. Awesome.
You know, awesome.
James Franco, much better actor.
Another fun game to play, I feel like, would be if you could switch subtitles. So, like, you're watching Transformers, but with the subtitles from, like, Crouching Tiger.
That's interesting.
Yes. And you've got Optimus Prime talking about how he finally figures out his poem.
Yeah.
He's out to the end of the poem.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
It would be.
On the Galaxy Quest DVD, they had subtitles in the alien language.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
That you could watch the whole movie in.
That's interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Where were we at? Four?
Brandon.
It's so easy to lose. There's only fucking five. It's a list of five, and it's always confusing. Where the fuck are we?
We're on three.
All right.
Yes.
I trust that we're on three.
All right. Number three, 92, Man Bites Dog.
Thank yes. you again. Seriously, you. I had Thank a lot you. Of trouble with this list. Yes.
I thought someone else might have this also, but I just, not more than 2 seconds ago, crossed out something else and put that in place.
I literally just took it out. So, well played, because I literally just took it out as Adam was speaking.
Because I think this might be the first foreign film I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah. I can't think of anything that I saw before this.
Hmm.
And so this is a fucked up first foreign movie.
I mean, I can't remember the first foreign movie I saw in theaters, and that was Amelie.
But that's 2001?
That's for in theaters.
Yeah, okay.
I can't remember what the first foreign movie I saw.
No, I saw this saw. On, I think I saw this on Laserdisc. Yeah, this would have been on Laserdisc.
Okay.
But no, this 92 documentary, well, mockumentary, also maybe the, actually, kind of a found footage movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because of how it ends. Mm-hmm, yes. But the documentary follows this serial killer named Remy.
Yeah.
Is it his name Remy?
Remy, okay. It is.
Follows serial killer Remy around and, you know, gets into all sorts of, you know, zany misadventures and hijinks, killing people. One of my favorites being when he just screams at an old woman and gives her a heart attack.
Oh,
yeah.
And he explains how he knew because of the medication. Like, you see, I saw the medication on the table, and so that's how I knew if I screamed, she would have a heart attack.
Yeah, brilliant. And just the pacing of it is great. How it just it's kind of like I watched Chronicle recently, which was really like the pacing of that, how it all escalates. Like it starts and then just builds and builds and builds to the finish. And this one just like, it doesn't let up, like things keep going wrong. And then there's, you know, they drained the, you know, the lake or reservoir where he was hiding all the bodies and everything. But just, I think it's more the way it's shot that it was a student film, I think. And it, you know, in Belgium, a place I had never been to, speaking a language I didn't understand, like it just felt a lot more real, I think, than it would now. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a few years, but it just felt, I remember it feeling just so real and brutal, and I never felt that watching a movie, like uncomfortable, because mostly it was just all cartoony violence I'd seen at that point, or just so gory it was, you know,
ridiculous.
Yeah, it was over the curve.
Was it Danish? This movie Danish?
I think it was Belgian.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, and I think It Came From Your Neighborhood. I think that's the actual title.
Yeah.
Of the movie.
Yes. Yeah. It could happen in your neighborhood.
It could happen in your neighborhood.
Yeah. This is such a good movie because, especially, I think it's a good movie to watch now because of reality TV and where, like,
yeah.
It's like, wow, this really. Someone could make a reality TV show about a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And they would show it and it would have amazing ratings. So it's really well made. And also the fact that it was in black and white.
Yeah, that helps the, you know, grittiness. Everything feels really dark. Every time he goes, like, to a place, it's always super, like, the bar is really dark.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of what Salesman, except just he's a serial killer.
Yeah.
You could just call it serial killer. And But I also feel like people would be, like, taking it seriously. Like, this is real. Like, they really follow the serial killer around because it's so, there's something more real about black and white where it's, like, newsreel footage.
Yeah,
it's a great movie.
Yeah,
it's
kind of pick. Like in the just where they shot it, kind of felt like Eraserhead, like kind of just kind of like weird, barren, you know, outer suburbs of, you know, a place I had no idea about up until that point.
Yeah, it's I like this is a movie that if we had a podcast of movies you like to see remade, I'd like to see this, the American version, just because because. I would like to make it. That's the movie I'd like to make, to be honest.
So that's what you're really saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'd like to make it.
Because I'm wary of certain people getting a hold of this movie and what it would become.
Yeah.
What would be the closest, probably, like, was it Session 9?
Yeah.
That might be the closest thing to this.
That's probably the closest.
But that was like a game show.
Yeah. Well, there was that one where they, a group of kids followed, like, a slasher.
Mr. Brooks?
Not Mr. No.
Wait, okay, I think he meant Series 7.
Series 7 is what I meant. Yeah,
Session 9's Brad Anderson.
Yeah, Series 7,
and then,
wait,
you're talking about Behind the Mask.
Behind the Mask.
Leslie Vernon, which is also amazing, and it does kind of feel like this, but that one's much more rooted in horror films than Man Bites Dog feels more like.
This is really lighthearted.
It's very lighthearted.
Besides the mass murder, it's really funny and lighthearted, and everyone's happy and bumping around. You know,
I like the in Man Bites Dog the turn that it takes when there's a rape in it.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, this is kind of funny.
Yeah, you're kind of on his side, and it's like Clockwork Orange. Yeah. You're like, oh, here's a bunch of crazy guys out taking on the world. Yeah, sure, he killed the woman on the train, whatever.
Yeah. funniest
scene. But rape, no.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, they crossed the line here, man. And then it's really, really uncomfortable because then, like, the documentarians, quote unquote, get involved.
Yeah, they, like, hold.
Oh, yeah.
They participate a little bit, yeah.
And you're like, oh, man, this isn't easy. This is making me uneasy. I don't know how I feel about this movie now.
Yeah, and that's what I felt really uneasy because, you know, I saw it really. Oh, yeah, there's a.
I just pulled it
up. Criterion, of course.
Yeah. I think it's only in Criterion. In the U.S. release, only Criterion.
It's on Hulu.
Is it? Interesting. Well, they have a lot of Criterion there, right?
Yeah, they have a Criterion.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely love this. I'm glad you put it on your list because I literally just took it off. And yeah.
I did look it up. The international poster, the version of which is on the front there. Well, an altered version. The original one had a hand. Oh, the pacifier. That is it. And I think maybe the other one had like the hand of a baby or something.
Yeah.
Reaching up.
I think the original one, this is the original.
For listeners, it's him pointing down, shooting a thing, and blood is pouring out. And it's implied he's shooting a baby.
Flying. And there's a pacifier flying up. But I think the censored one, it doesn't have the pacifier.
Okay.
I think that's a difference. But damn good pick.
Misleading movie marketing. I don't think he shoots a baby in the movie.
At all. God. Yeah.
Every time.
He does shoot a midget. Not a little person, sorry. all right, so my number three, is it? Yeah. We're in three. I picked a movie from 2000, and it's a movie from Spain, and it's called Nine Queens. Again, another crime drama. It's con men pulling some confidence games, and I love it. I love this. It's very simple. It's in the beginning. It's set up, and you're like, it's one of those movies where if you're not. You're not paying attention. You're gonna lose of who's who and like tracking because you're always with these like con movies. You're trying to figure out the story before it ends. You're like, okay, this guy's gonna double cross this guy, but yeah, you have to really be on your toes and it's really fun. And they remade it into a movie called Criminal with Diego Luna and John C. Reilly. And I didn't hate that the remake of it. It was really interesting and they made it
kind of.
You did? Yeah. I like that they kept it really simple and like, I don't know. I didn't hate it. So why did you hate it?
I don't know. I felt it was too simple. Like I knew it was, I got ahead of it. Like I knew where it was going.
Yeah.
It's like, I know exactly what's happening.
Did you see this first or you see the Spanish?
I've never seen the Spanish version. I've seen.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I know where you're going and I don't really need to keep watching. Okay. But I mean, I love John C. Reilly and I love Diego Luna, but I was ahead of the movie, so
yeah. I feel like the original one is a little more complex, and the fact that it's in Spanish, even though I know Spanish, it's still Castilian Spanish, so it's like still like what the fuck are they saying? what does that mean?
what does that mean?
Yes. So it's really fun, and yeah, I like this director as well. So check this movie out.
Nice. Okay, so. I have a film here, but I have a backup just in case you guys veto this. Because technically, if you look at IMDb...
We get a veto?
We've never had vetoes.
Unanimous majority? How does a veto work?
Well, usually, like, someone will make an argument, a really good argument most of the time. And be like, all right, well, we'll allow it. But we've never had a veto, so this could be the first one.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So my number three...
Veto. I'm sorry. Can't be worse than Lock, Stock for a
film. Does it have Danny DeVito in it?
It doesn't.
No, okay.
But
here's
the thing. In IMDb, they say it's a 1989 TV series on IMDb. So I don't know if you were going to veto it, but it's the Decalogue.
Oh, no. I totally count that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I count it. We'll allow it.
Awesome. Good. This movie, in a way, for me, was like film school. I mean, it's a series of 10 short films that are somewhat loosely based on the Ten Commandments, but kind of the way that Kieslowski, right from the start of the film, sets a mood for that specific film with an image or with sound and just kind of follows that atmosphere throughout the rest of the film is something that I would aspire to be able to do as a filmmaker.
And pulling people into deep pits of despair.
Yes, and doing that as well. Now, mind you, well, okay, most of them are, he pulls you in deep pits of despair. But
they're the commandments.
Yeah, he does it so well that if you can take that and then translate that to a love story or something else where maybe it might not become despair, but take you from the beginning and set a mood that you can follow along all the way to the end.
I love the Decalogue, but watching the Decalogue just makes me want to give a Polish person a hug.
it's true.
Hey,
pole, right here, buddy.
All right, I'll hit you up afterwards.
You're too far.
The table's in between us. Yeah.
I definitely agree with you. But he does such a great job of pulling you into that and making you want to do that to any Polish person.
I feel like Ricardo would have this on his just because of the stillness.
Yeah,
yes,
he has that great.
It's a movie that stillness. Like I totally like. Ugh, damn you.
And the stillness and just very intimate.
Yes.
And I don't want to say it in a diminishing sort of way, but the small stories.
Yeah. You know, no, they're very,
very
simple,
small, and not a lot.
Yeah.
Not a lot to them. And I love how simple they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's all about, in a way, it's just
about.
But don't
try to watch them all.
It's no. No, definitely don't try to watch them all in a row. And you don't have to. But it's about the characters and how, in a way, sometimes how these characters interact with each other or how they feel about somebody else. But it's something very special, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And yes, if you watch them all, you're going to be pulled into a deep pit of despair. But don't do that. Just watch them each separately, and you'll enjoy them all. And I think everybody will enjoy them.
Yeah, you know, you just remind me of something. This weekend, like. No, 2 weekends ago. I had a short film at a film festival, and James Franco kind of is in the same theater group. And he had one shitty movie, and he had two really good short films. He had three short films in it, but only two were really good. And it kind of...
Sounds like Franco.
He reminds me of this, that he had it was a short film, and it was about nothing. It was kind of like A Day in Life. And it starred, I'm drawing a blank on the name, the guy that's in Last Action Hero, the villain with the glass eye.
Charles Dance.
Yes. Yeah. He's in Game of Thrones. Yes.
Also the bad guy in Golden Child.
Yes.
Yes.
So he played like a gay, like men's clothing store attendant. Like a
salesperson?
Yes. I forgot the store. The store is a famous fucking store. What the fuck?
Barney's.
Tellers?
No, not
Forever 21.
Not
Gap.
Barney's. No, it's like high-end men's.
Eddie Bauer.
No, I don't know what it is, but it's literally a day in the life, and he is just
Express
him holding
man. Diesel.
You're getting close. You're getting close.
Kenneth Cole. Hugo Boss.
Keep going.
Wait, did you say H&M?
It's a classic.
Fred Siegel.
Classic.
Classic.
Like it's kind of like not JCPenney's, not Nordstrom's. Classic. Go back.
Macy's?
Go back.
TJ Maxx.
No. You're going ghetto on me.
You said JCPenney.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sorry. Anyway, and it's just like a day Sacks. In the life. You're close. You're
Nordstrom's.
Very close.
Neiman Marcus.
Very close.
Macy's.
You guys are so close.
This is the Just Shout Random Things podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, and it's him like just telling jokes and talking to customers. And I really enjoyed it. I'm like, wow, like this is so simple. It was like 10 minutes short, and it was really cool. And it was really still, and I really enjoyed it. It shot on like the 7D. But then he had
all
a feature.
All it has to do is be still for you.
So, and he's
I have there. To say, as a listener, I don't understand why each list isn't Baraka, Manufactured Landscapes, The Bear.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be.
What's that?
He's saving those.
Sundays in the Park? What's that? The one, the Billy Wilder one where they just go and set the camera up in the park.
I know.
What's that Andy Warhol movie where it's just 15 hours of him on the couch?
I could have that movie. You never know. I may be saving that till like when we're going to go off the air. Like we're not going to do any more.
That should be the finale. favorite stills.
Stills,
yeah. Yeah.
It's just pictures. Literally.
I call them stills.
So I saw that. And then another one of his shorts had... Michael Shannon in it. Just guy working like awesome. This.
Do your Michael Shannon impersonation.
It sounds like Nick. He's like, what? It's Nick Nolte. It's Nick Nolte. But yeah, so anyway, it just reminded me of that, how the stillness and stuff. But yes, we got really away from this topic. And
I don't even know what
naming
we're
stores
about
and yeah, we're number three. I
Where
think.
Am I?
Three.
We still don't know the store.
Three.
Number three?
I still don't know the store.
number three. Okay, so another Ingmar Bergman movie that I loved right away. But I feel like part of the reason I love this movie as much as I did is because of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yes.
And that's The Seventh Seal.
Nice.
It's like pre-programming you to love something where someone's referencing it, and then you finally see what the reference was, and it makes you love the original source material all that much more. And I love The Seventh Seal. It's Max von Sydow playing a knight on his way back from the Crusades, and he meets Death, and he's playing Death in a game of chess for his life. And it's amazing, and I love it. And I love basically any reference to this movie, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Woody Allen's Love and Death.
500 Days of Summer.
We'll 500 Days of Summer. Stephen Colbert's Cheating Death.
Yeah.
It's just a great film. And just so, so, so many memorable moments. So much happening. The Dance of Death that's in the poster and at the end. It's a great film. If you haven't seen this movie and you can deal with reading subtitles. Well, I mean, you should just learn how to read subtitles. I mean, it's...
If you don't know how to read subtitles, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You're illiterate, first of all.
Yeah, I think you need to start elsewhere than learning to read subtitles.
Well, no, but I feel like watching a foreign film and absorbing it all is akin to reading a comic book. Like, it's kind of like you don't realize that it's a skill that you need. Like, some people, they get so hung up on reading the words, or they get so hung up on watching what's going on, they don't go back and forth. It's like tunnel vision.
In high school, I was in Japanese, and we had a substitute, and they were just playing a movie for us. And there was this kid who liked to be an asshole in the class, and he kept yelling at the teacher that he couldn't read that fast. And so she went up, because you're a substitute, and like you have to help kids, and she doesn't know the kid's just being an asshole. So she goes up there and like is reading the subtitles to him as the movie goes on.
Jeez. At the same time, though, I feel like there are some people who are really like that, who just they get hung up on the words or hung up on the visuals, and they're missing something.
But do you, this is an interesting question though. Do you feel like you miss out at all on any of the visuals because you have to read subtitles?
I feel like I've learned how to watch them where I'm never looking away from one. Like, I'm just absorbing it all at once. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like speed reading where you're not looking at the individual sentence, you're looking at the paragraph. So I'm looking at the whole.
But I feel like, and maybe Ricardo can speak to this, it might interrupt the stillness when you have to move your eyes back and forth, because when you want to take in the visuals, but then you have to read letters.
Yes, I have talked to some, I've talked to somebody about this, and this is what I came up with. And this is my theory based on the fact that I understand Spanish, and like it'll take a movie like Y Tu Mamá También. So I don't need to read the subtitles. Because I understand. So watching that movie, and then sometimes it would distract me because I would start reading the subtitles. Do you know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, I don't
the
have to
read. The subtitles that are in English when you can understand Spanish.
Yes, that distracted me. But I think when you're watching something like that's in French or, you know, whatever other language it's from, you forget at some point. It's like what Adam said, that you forget and you can do two things at the same time.
Yeah,
you could, but I feel like a movie that's really, really still like this. I feel like it may detract now. Now that you're mentioning it.
Well, but I know
you're right.
I know. Oh man, I just pointed out like the weird artifact that you're always going to see now.
I know. I'm like, man. I'm missing stillness. What the fuck's going on?
But I know what you mean, because there are times when I'll be watching for some whatever reason. It's a bad DVD or something like that. I can't get the subtitles off.
Oh yeah,
and I still read them. Like, and I just have to, whether it's because I program myself when there are subtitles to go back and forth between the thing, but I, even though it's in English and I understand it, I still go down and read it, and I can't avoid it because it's a thing moving on the bottom of the screen all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, addressing your stillness, I feel like it's easier to deal with the stillness and the subtitles than it is with the fast-paced movie subtitles.
But see, I love the stillness of it.
No, but you can still appreciate the stillness and the subtitles, whereas if it's things are moving quickly, you will miss something.
I guess so. I guess
if you haven't trained yourself to watch a foreign
film. But see,
and
there's also moments in the stillness that I may be missing because I'm over here like an idiot fucking reading.
That's why you rewatch it.
If it's still, it's not moving.
Yeah. I guess so.
True.
So you can.
What if there's voiceover? Bam. What? It's still.
That, That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
Then it's literal over. Stillness. Yeah. And just words on the bottom.
See, you're reading lips.
Yeah.
There you go. That's your problem. But it's just making me think of an instance where it was bad subtitles, where the subtitles were too quick for me. I got a bad copy of Rec or Record or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And the subtitles were cutting off too quickly.
Oh.
So that was a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
because I don't speak Spanish,
and there's not a lot of stillness in that. So you
there's not it's moving around a lot, so it was difficult to follow.
I also there's some movies, foreign films that have like the words don't match up. Like I know they had a problem with Let the Right One In, that they had to recall them because there was something wrong with the subtitles.
Yeah, I remember that. And sometimes jokes in the movie don't work, like linguistic things that just make more sense, so you have to change it in the English version. Yeah.
Didn't you mention something about Guillermo del Toro doing his own subtitles because it got so messed up on
I think
Kronos
in Kronos it got so
the
so
first
messed up.
Kronos not the Criterion
the original like Kronos like I would say VHS tape maybe they got so messed up that from that point on he's the only guy who does his own he translates the subtitles.
God bless that man.
I dig it. I dig that. There's something cool. Like he's like, fuck it. And this guy, someone's gonna fuck it up. I'm gonna do it myself.
I speak both. I can write them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't be that hard.
Yeah.
I probably wrote it too. So
yeah. I'm gonna confess. I'm illiterate in Spanish. I can't write. I can't. I have a hard time. Yeah. I could barely.
You can read it, though.
I can. Kind of. Yeah.
Is it really that much? Because I don't know. I'm a dumb American. I don't speak any other language other than English. But it's really that it's so departed from hearing it. And reading it and understanding it?
I have a problem with comprehension. Comprehension, yes, kind of.
But you can hear it and understand what people
say. Oh, yeah, I hear it. I'm fine talking to people in Spanish. But it's just reading it that I sound like an idiot. And they're like, oh, it's okay, don't read it. I'll tell you what it says.
Well, I think the problem is you're hanging out with jerks.
Yeah, my dad sometimes tells me, don't talk to me in Spanish. It's like, all right.
Wow.
But yeah. So, anyway.
So, number two?
Yeah.
Number two.
Yeah.
Number two, Ingmar Bergman, 1985, Police Story. No, not Ingmar Bergman. I don't have any Swedes.
I see how it is.
I'm globetrotting, but I don't have any Swedes. No, Police Story, which is the first. If I could put the whole series, I would put the whole series, but Jackie Chan's continuing Chinese series of action films.
I was
films.
Expecting some Jackie Chan from you.
Well, yeah, of course Jackie Chan.
You have to tell a story about your Jackie Chan tapes.
Well, I'm a big... Okay, so I'll say something that I don't think has been said, at least on the podcast, probably in this hemisphere, is that for me, Rumble in the Bronx was a transcendent experience.
We haven't said that, but I concur.
Yeah, I saw Rumble in the Bronx, and I didn't understand who this guy was, what the deal was. There was a place my dad and I used to rent laser discs from this place called Laserland. And so they had a whole bunch of imported laser discs. And so we went and I just loaded up on Jackie Chan stuff. And so, yes, I made a series of tapes that are just from 20 to 30 Jackie Chan movies that are just the fight scenes and stunts in like 3 2-hour tapes.
It's amazing.
That sounds amazing.
That's a party.
You have that?
Yeah. We had that party, I feel like. One time we were hanging out at his house, and you just put on one of your Jackie Chan tapes.
Yeah.
And it's just the fight scenes. And you feel like, oh, but I'm going to want to miss the movie. I'm going to miss the movie. No, it's fine.
Yeah.
You can just watch the fight scene. It was great.
But Police Story is great because he made it specifically. He tried to break into the American market, and he failed. He was in this movie called The Protector with Danny Aiello.
Wow.
Which I don't think I've seen that one.
Kills me to say every time. You probably have not. I saw half of it once because it was on like TNT early in the morning, like 15 years ago.
Says a lot. If it's on TNT early in the morning and it's not Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, exactly.
They probably.
But yeah, he partners up with Danny Aiello. It was terrible. So we went back to China and he was like, fuck it. I'm just going to make my own thing. So he just came up and I remember reading a thing with the writer and it was big. He just came out. Yeah, I want to have a big fight in a mall. I wanted to chase down a bus, and then there's going to be a kidnapping. I'm going to do this thing around two cars, and so this guy just kind of had to write the thing around that. So I don't remember anything about the plot. I just remember the fight scenes, and the mall one is amazing. You might have seen clips from the mall one in something because he slides down like a giant chandelier and crashes through all the light bulbs as he goes down and crashes through this glass ceiling onto a thing. They had forgotten to turn off the lights. And so the rod that he grabs onto was piping hot. And so he got like third degree burns on his hands.
Wow.
And broke his pelvis when he crashed to the ground.
Oh, but
I know that's what he did in every movie. And it's the first time I ever got to experience a Jackie Chan song theme song during the end credits of a movie.
Wow.
And it is spectacular.
He sang it himself?
Oh, he's got albums.
Oh. He's like Manny Pacquiao.
All of his movies. Carpet right after that. But I think he's done that for every single Rumble in the the American Rumble in the Bronx had some weird Jackie Chan song like about from some Canadian band.
Wow,
that was weird.
Yeah, it was interesting. But Rumble in the Bronx, did you see that on Laserdisc also?
No, Rumble in the Bronx is on the theaters.
Okay,
yeah.
So I think what we're gonna have to do our first like commentary podcast. We're gonna have to have a video podcast where you bring those tapes over and we put them on Final Cut and we record ourselves. Doing some commentaries for these tapes.
Oh, that's fine. It's just going to be us in awe of all of Jackie Chan's amazing.
Just us in silence, like oh,
badassery that he's throwing across the screen. Yeah, and it's stuff like, and I think the thing that got me, the reason why I really loved it is that it's a different. I remember Jean-Claude Van Damme did that movie. The Ring?
Yes,
where it's like all the fighters from around the world go and compete for
the
this.
Quest.
The quest. Sorry, yes.
There's a microphone there.
Yeah,
or Bloodsport or The Quest?
The Quest. It was The Quest, because I remember an interview with him where he was like, "Yeah, we went over there and like they got offended if you didn't punch him in the face." and I feel like that whole mentality is there because they didn't have, you know, there's no big technology, so they have candy glass. That's about it. But every time they're falling on things, they are hard things. That they are falling and crashing. I mean, people get hurt. You can see people getting hurt all the time. They are amazing stunt workers, like the best in the world, but you can just see them getting hurt. And I thought that was amazing. And just the way, and Jackie Chan, just the way he uses his trademark is using the environment, you know, to choreograph his scenes and, you know, making it look like the whole thing is improvised based on what's lying around. But it's just, it's great. All of them are great.
I'm sure he has many fight scenes in a mall, but which is the one where he's doing the cooking demonstration?
Oh, that's not one of the police stories, but that's the one. Oh no, it is. I think it's the third one. I think it's First Strike, because then he goes down to Australia.
Okay.
Yes. No, it's the cooking one. And like, it does the thing where he flips it up like five stories.
Yeah.
Like the shrimp into a woman's mouth.
Wow. Yeah.
And then after that, I think there's a chase on rickshaws.
Like you do.
Well, you have to.
Yeah. But no, it's great. I love Jackie Chan.
My favorite chase scene, Bloodsport. It's Forrest Whitaker chasing Van Damme through the streets.
Now that should be remade.
Yeah.
I would love to see Forrest Whitaker today chasing down Van Damme.
Expendables 3.
Reprising his role as, you know, as the agent, the FBI agent. So now I got to watch a bunch of Jackie Chan. I totally forgot about Jackie Chan.
That's fine. I'll get you the tapes.
Oh, we're going to watch these tapes.
Which were all recorded for educational purposes. I used them at community colleges to teach students about filmmaking. They're in no way for personal use.
Yes.
Right.
At all. I couldn't do it.
Serious, guys.
Couldn't do it.
I know you're serious. That's why I watched them.
Yes.
I learned a lot.
Yeah,
about choreographing fight scenes.
I'm not serious. They're amazing. I'm not sorry.
All right, my number two is a film from 1925, and there's two titles to it. There's the original title, and then for some reason they changed it like a couple years ago. The title you might know this movie by is a movie called Jealousy. It came out in 1925. And this dude, E.A. DuPont, he's the first guy. Yeah, I went pretentious.
Cranked up the pretension on that one.
This guy was amazing. He's the first guy to use three cameras. He's kind of like the grandfather of like the three camera setup. And
he's the Desi Arnaz of 20th cinema.
Yeah. It's an old black and white French film, and the original title is called like Variété. And it's basically, I think you might have seen this movie. In like one of the film classes,
he's pointing at Kevin.
Yeah, I'm pointing at Kevin. Sorry,
I'm trying to remember if I did.
It's about the trapeze, the couple that's the trapeze,
The Flying circus. Graysons?
No, yes. No. And then their boss, there's like a plot, the murder plot and stuff.
This sounds like the Flying Graysons.
This sounds like the Flying Graysons, but I don't remember this other than in Batman.
Okay, then no. Then no. It's really cool.
Oh, there you go.
They're coming from Brandon. Where are his damn tapes?
Damn you and your Jackie Chan tapes.
They're like, well, we heard something about tapes.
I recorded them for my film professor. I had written...
Hey, you're commenting on them. It's fair use.
Yeah. Yes, I have commented on them.
Yeah. Well, this is a really good film, and you should check it out. It's not on DVD. I saw it at film school, and someone had a copy. I think it might have been a film copy too. And it's such a cool little it's a cool story about this couple, and like how the circus owner is like jealous of this couple, and he wants to kill the guy so he can marry the wife. Basically, is the gist of it.
Like you do,
like you do, and when you own a circus, and the movie's only an hour and 12 minutes, so it's short, sweet, and it's in black and white, 1925.
Jealousy. It just makes me want to watch Freaks.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is going to be yeah. at the Egyptian coming up. The Freaks and Carnival of Souls.
Really?
Ooh. Yes. Ooh. So if you're in LA, go check that out.
Q&A with the Freaks.
I wish.
Yes, we're in LA.
Yeah, they might just bring people in from the.
off of Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah. Yeah. Just people who are like dressed as like Iron Man and stuff.
And at the end, they're going to chant One of Us.
Yeah.
One of Us. Got a Dennis Hoff Q&A afterwards.
All right. Well, that was my number two.
Okay. My number two is from 1953, and it's Wages of Fear.
Oh. Did I have this on? I feel like I used this on another pick.
You used the... I remember you talking about the sequel or the...
Sorcerer.
You okay. talked about Sorcerer.
Yeah. Okay. So I should have had this on this list, but I'm glad that you do. But I love this movie so much.
I love this movie. I love the tension. I mean, so the plot of the film are these guys in a South American village have to transport with really crappy trucks a shipment of nitroglycerin, basically kind of like to the top of a mountain where they're mining. Where they're mining for oil.
Wait, what year is it? 50.
The film?
Yeah.
53.
So 1953 trucks with yeah. their wonderful suspension.
Wow. Yes.
And nitroglycerin.
Unpaved roads.
Through the mountains.
Yeah. I just love the way they set up the characters and then they kind of just show how when you get put into a certain situation, how you really react as a person. But the tension, I mean, the way that they get in these situations where it's like they're going to fucking die or someone's going to die. I mean, it really gets you. For a film, when you think of older films, you don't think of yourself digging your like hands into like the armrest next to you or feeling really tense. And this movie gets me every time I watch it. I always forget, I forget what happens after this. Does this guy die or do they blow up? What happens? And they just suck you right in and you just go for the ride and you're really worried about what's going to happen and what's going to happen to these four guys as they're driving two separate trucks up the mountain.
Serious knots in your stomach.
Yes. Wow. It's Clouseau does a great job of just really just putting you there and almost feeling like you're going to blow up if something happens.
And this is another sort of pseudo documentary, like the feel of it, like you feel like you're there in a weird way, even yes. for a black and white movie. Like the scene with the oil fire, like it's
beautiful shot too.
Fire in a black and white film,
yes,
where you can feel the heat. That says something about it, I think. Where it's just so intense and just the visuals. It's a great movie, and I love it. And I'm really glad. I couldn't remember if I used it or if I used Sorcerer, so I didn't put it on. So I'm really glad that you used it. And sort of remade two times. Because Sorcerer and then Sad But True, Vertical Limit.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You pulled that out of nowhere. Brandon's got to write that down to watch.
You don't. You really don't.
It's Skeet Ulrich, right? And Cuba? What am I thinking?
Oh, no, that's a chill factor.
Yeah.
Which I guess technically, I mean, no.
No, Vertical Limit is what Robin Tooney and Chris O'Donnell.
Oh, I know exactly.
And Bill Paxton and yes. Scott Glenn.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And it's like the mountain climbers.
You're right,
it's the rescue.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand why they had to send them with nitroglycerin to rescue people. But whatever.
Hey, that's how they do it.
That's how you rescue countries. People
in the mountains with nitroglycerin. Yeah. I'm going to blow shit up on top of you. Yeah. You're saved.
And why did I confuse it with chill factor?
I don't know. I mean, they both involve explosions.
Cold. Yeah, and it's chill. It's chilly.
They're both not very good.
Yeah. But yeah.
Number two?
Yeah.
Would you have any more to say about
it? No, I'm good.
Okay, so my number two from 1958 by Louis Mao, Elevator to the Gallows. I love this movie.
You made me watch this.
I did make you watch this. It's so good. I love the soundtrack. It's by Miles Davis. It's just such a great... Have you seen this, Ricardo?
No.
I think you would like it a lot.
Really?
The stillness of it. Well, one of the characters... You know, every time I tell Ricardo he's going to love movies, I have to mention the stillness.
Yeah. That's the hook, really. If you're like, this is really high like action-paced, yeah, nah, I'm good.
Can I take a quick tangent? I just have to ask.
No.
Because I'm a guest here, so I have to know. What... to you exemplifies stillness? Like what you saw a movie and you're like, holy shit, this is nothing's going, like this is so still. I'm looking and nothing is moving. Not the camera, not things.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I don't know
that
if
that actor has not moved an inch.
I told you already, La Jetée.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I guess that would be it.
That would be it. It's the red balloon. You're just like, oh, the fucking balloon.
Yeah.
It fucks up every shot.
Yeah. I just like slow movies.
No, it's a mood thing. I get it. It's a total tone mood. I love when just things they take their time with something.
If someone says, I thought the movie was boring, I'm like, that's the movie I got to watch.
What always comes back to Malick for him?
I guess that could answer my own question. Yeah. But I feel. What was I going to say?
I think those
are the moments I think I remember most about certain things. Like, it's not movie related, but Game of Thrones, there's a scene between Tywin and the girl, and there's just like cuts, like, there's like 20 cuts of them back and forth staring each other down.
Yes.
And like, those are the more gaps I have to fill in. I think those are moments I remember a lot. I'll bring up an honorable mention. One of my honorable mentions was The Killer.
Oh,
and yes. I haven't seen it for so long. One of the only things I can remember is the scene where they're just pointing the guns at each other in the blind girl's house.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And that is so incredible to me. And frankly, nothing happens in the scene. Like, she's just making tea or whatever, and they're just walking around. But it's the tension of a single thing just drawn out.
Yeah.
Just as far as you could. So I totally get why stillness would be a thing that you would enjoy.
Also, too, I dig this. It's funny. I submitted my short film to this film festival. And so the director of the film festival was like my writing teacher who was my mentor and stuff. And he was like, you got to cut some of this. You got to come in later and leave earlier. Like, this, like, it's way excessive. And that's what I like about movies, is that where you get to see, like, it's almost like reality. Like, you're getting to see, like, people thinking. I like that. Some people can't do that. Yeah. Some actors can't do that. You can't. Some actors are like, if you were to say to them, I want to see you thinking, they would start emoting.
Yeah.
When it's not about that. I think the best example of someone thinking and me fucking getting it is in Shame. Did you see Shame?
I haven't yet. No.
There's a scene. There's a scene in the beginning, and he's just in the subway, and there's no dialogue at all, and he's looking at this girl, and you get the whole conversation they're both having in their head. And they don't speak a fucking word together.
Well, but it might not even be that. It's that you get the conversation that's going on in your head for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to relate at all to the actual characters in the movie. But it plays for you because it's what it's everything that you put into it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the actors are a guiding point. But
yeah.
Then it's just all you to fill in the blanks of their thoughts.
Totally.
And that's what makes those really great moments.
Yeah, yeah. And I dig that in when movies cut. And it's really like, you're like, oh, it came in a little earlier. But I like that about movies sometimes.
Well, I think Ricardo's fondness for stillness can be found in two major sources. Terrence Malick and Sergio Leone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, and see, that's interesting, because if this was a list of like the Bad and the Ugly would be on number two or number one, because yeah, the stillness in any Leon movie is amazing, but I don't, I'm not a, like the Thin Red Line. I was not a huge fan of, because I felt like it was, I don't know. I guess I just didn't, I felt like it was a lot of stillness for stillness sake. Oh, I'm going to paint with the camera here. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's beautiful beyond doubt. I just didn't feel like there was a lot of...
Hey, you don't have to defend your distaste for that movie to me. You have to direct that to Ricardo.
Yeah, no, I just feel like there's not as much behind it. It's used so often, whereas Leon will, like, build up to a moment and then nothing happens for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's all the, it's everything that came before it that matters.
Yes.
I feel like that didn't translate as well into something like The Thin Red Line or like The Tree of Life or something like that.
See, The Tree of Life, I understand. I totally understand with The Thin Red Line. I totally understand when people are like, ah, just, but for me, The Tree of Life kind of, it kind of really worked for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved that sequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
The sequence.
Yeah. 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 But it just, there's some things, and the thing is with Terrence Malick, I totally understand when people are like, nah, just not my thing. I'm like, totally understand it. And it is nothing but my thing. So, yeah.
So anyway, Elevator to the Gallows.
Sorry, we went on like.
You had to start with the stillness.
I know.
Oh, I know. Oh, no. I saw that coming a mile away. As soon as I said stillness.
We're like, we're going to get into
half. But it's okay, because during that stillness, I was still. Elevated to the Gallows. It's about these two lovers who conspire to kill, like, this woman's cheating on her husband, and her lover and her conspire to kill him. And in the process, the lover gets stuck in an elevator. So for 80% of the movie, he's stuck in the elevator, and she is wandering around trying to figure out where he is. Like, they're supposed to meet up afterwards, and she can't find him. And so he's stuck in an elevator, and she's just wandering the streets of Paris, distraught, thinking that he has ditched her and given up on her. And Jean Moreau is amazing, and just staying with her, and the camera shots were just kind of dollying along with her through the streets of Paris to Miles Davis music. It's gorgeous and it's amazing, and I love it. And maybe it's a little pretentious, but I don't know what to tell you. It's one of my favorite movies.
It's very pretentious, but it's great.
Yeah. What he said.
It can be both.
Yeah. No, that's on my
list. So I will bring that over next time for you to watch.
You own it?
Yes. Oh, of course. I have the movie and the soundtrack.
Ooh.
You can borrow both if you want.
Oh, I will. I'll take that challenge. All right. Where are we at? Are we at one already?
Number one.
So let's do the recap and then you're number one.
Oh, okay. Recap number five. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Number four, El Bui, Cooking in Progress. Number three, Man Bites Dog. Two, Police Story. Number one, let's get into it, 2001, Amelie.
What are we going to get into?
I don't know. Yeah. I thought that might have been your number one.
No. Well, I've used it already.
Oh, you
did? Yeah. Romantic movie?
I don't remember what I
used. No, I used it for a romantic
movie. Oh, okay. You used Amelie for something else.
I did. I don't remember what off the top of my head, but I vaguely remember using it.
Fantasy? No.
I can't remember.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll get half into it. Or 25% into it.
Yeah, no. I mean, maybe I just thought I used it, but as far as I know, I've used it on a list already, so that's why I didn't have it. But yes, I love this movie.
Yeah. I just rewatched it because I figured it would be my number one choice, but it's... I don't know. I feel like it represents everything that I really love in movies. There's, man, this is sounding pretentious. There's whimsy. But like, it's all within the world. It's not like an episode of How I Met Your Mother or something where someone does something like so fantastical and whimsical that, it tugs your heartstrings or whatever. This builds a very specific universe for all that to happen. And it's just all the movie. My favorite parts of the movie are obviously all of just the little moments of things like that are just so perfect that adds dimension to everything. There's, the cat who loves listening to children's stories, like the woman who hates seeing their father embarrassed in front of their children, but loves seeing athletes cry with disappointment. Mm-hmm. Like it's very specific things like that that gets me. And like the part at the very beginning, my favorite part of the movie, at the very beginning when she takes. It's like in a rush and she takes the blind man across the street and is like taking him through and like telling, the horse has lost his ear. This is on sale in the shop. Mm-hmm. Here we're passing this person. Like I cry every single time that happens. And it's helped with the score, which is the score feels like it's five songs played over and over, but it's just, it's so lyrical and propulsive, and just all of the emotion just comes from joy. Like, yeah. I can't think of another movie that I watch and I'm not happy afterwards. Yeah. Just like not conflicted, not, you know, thinking about things. It's just happy and just joy. And everyone in it is really great. But it's just, it's all about the world and how it's constructed, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's Jean-Pierre Jeunet doing the same thing he did with City of Lost Children, but with Paris. So yeah. It's like the ideal version of Paris,
yes,
you know, just
yes.
The magical world of, you know, of coffee and wine and chartreuse, like, you know, just all, you know, one's drinking out of the tiny little cognac glasses.
Yes.
So it's just all little things like that. And I just can't, I sparingly watch it because I never want to get tired of it.
Yeah.
But every time I do, I walk away. Yeah. That's
I don't know how you could get tired of this movie. I mean, it's what, just how many different pretentious things can I think of? Is it like, is Joie de Vivre?
It's French. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay. So this film is one of
certain
the few,
je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi. It's the truest embodiment of a word that I don't think anyone ever really has the right to use. Ebullience. Ebullience. I'm drunk. Ebullience. There we go. Like this, it's, that's what it is. I mean, that's what else. What else is ebullient?
Yeah.
Tell me right now.
And like, you fall in love with her immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, just straight off the
bat. I think I still am in love with her.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, you can't, and that's the thing. I mean, it's, I think you could look at it and see like, oh, it's so, like, it's just so sickeningly precious, you know, like there's just a lot of stuff that's just so sweet and precious, like far too much for its own good.
But it's never saccharine to me.
Like, no, exactly. No, that's the right. thing. It's just joy. Like, besides besides leading the blind man across the street, like being one of my favorite moments in movies ever. Just the little part at the end where it talks about the guy realizing he has more links in his brain than there are atoms in the universe. Mm-hmm. Like, as a final little moment, like, that is perfect. Like, and it just leaves you with a sense, it's the sense of awe through the whole thing. Like, and that moment specifically, you know, is a moment of awe. Like, anyone who knows that is in awe of that fact. But the fact that it's at the end of the movie is just like a kicker that, you know, just this whole thing is just so grand. And it just, it makes no apologies for it. Mm-hmm. I could go on forever. Like,
that's why it's so memorable to, like, I'm just, I feel weird saying blessed, but I feel like blessed.
You said it.
I did. But that's the first horror movie I ever saw in theaters, and it was just such an epic experience for me. Like, I love Amelie so much. And if I didn't use it, I don't know why that I felt like I did, but yeah. I'm pretty sure I used it at some point previously.
And I feel like it would not be as good if the same story was being told by anyone other than a French filmmaker.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like it is so,
well, there's something
French.
There's something about, like, have you seen the movie Happenstance?
No.
Where it's like the same vibe. Like, it's that feel, that yeah. weird sort of, well, it's Happenstance.
Well, yeah,
I mean, Happenstance,
Happenstance
vibe.
Sounds like, you know, while just bouncing around the world with all the little, you know, factoids of people and what's happening. You
right.
know, on this happened, and then, you know, December 18th, 1973.
Happenstance, the phrase or the word captures what Amelie is about. And, the, like, Happenstance, the movie, is similar to Amelie. But it's missing a little bit. I feel like, Kevin, have you seen Happenstance?
I have seen Happenstance. Yeah, and it is missing something. And it's missing Jeunet. I mean,
yeah,
you could say it couldn't be done by anybody who's French. It couldn't be done by anybody but him.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is, when you say he created it creates a world. I mean, that's his world. It's almost like I would love to just kind of hang out with him for a day. Because if you look at all his films, they're all unique and quirky, and they build their own little world.
Yeah.
And I bet he's a really interesting person to hang out with.
Like, there's definitely a French sensibility to the film, but I do agree with what Kevin said. Like, it's Jeunet.
Yeah, maybe it's just that the fact that it was that he's French is a byproduct, that the fact that it just feels so French.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of another movie that I'd more want to hang out in that world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually I went to the cafe.
The two windmills?
Yeah.
You did? Awesome.
Yeah. The one where she works at. Yeah. I was like,
did you sit in the corner talking into your recorder complaining about everything that happens with the tobacconist?
No, I didn't. It was really packed, actually.
Did you have sex in the toilet?
No. I did use the toilet, though. Really weird toilets there. And I went to the two biggest places that I wanted.
You went to the sex shop too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. No,
I don't think they show the exterior. Yeah.
The two places that I really, really, really like wanted to kind of see was, I think that was one of them. And then the place I really wanted to go to was the cafe from Before Sunset. The one where they have coffee before.
Man, I was wrong on both counts. I thought first you were going to say Moulin Rouge, which is a huge disappointment.
Yeah, no.
It is, and it's in a bad part of town. Like, it is, there is nothing magical about the Moulin Rouge. Yeah. And then the Le Panagil. I thought you might say Le Panagil.
Yeah, no. It was that. And for some reason, the stupid scene that takes place in the beginning of Bourne Identity. It was right down the street from our hotel. I'm like, I want to see that square. What an idiot. But yeah, this movie, I love it. And I didn't see it in theaters, but when we saw the double feature, I got to see it in theaters. And it's definitely, I was just talking to somebody the other day about how, because they were talking about like, oh, well, nowadays with the new technology, it's really cool just to see it at home, like home theaters. So you got surround sound, you got HD. And I'm like, no, it's not the same, because when you're at home, and I noticed it because I've had a couple movie nights and people are texting. Even I found myself like just checking, like, oh, I'll check Facebook real quick. And it's like, no, like when you go to the theater, you don't. There's something about it where you're
sacred.
It's sacred, yeah. and there's
it should be sacred.
It should be sacred, yeah. And I just love the fact that you don't check your phone. I've never had the inkling of like, did I miss a missed call or like no. Just
my phone is off.
Yeah, you're there. You're enjoying it, and you're 100% there. And I think, when you watch a movie, watching this movie at home, I don't think it has the same effect because you're not engaged, and I don't know.
Unless you have a home theater that's actual, like, with the seating.
With an usher who's like, turn off your phones, man.
There's a dark room. Yeah. You've got a 30-foot screen.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
And a good sound system. I can't overemphasize how much I love the score
for
the movie. I mean,
another soundtrack I have.
And that is so huge. You know, just the accordion and, you know, the lyrical piano, mm-hmm. just everything about it.
It's a great pick. Good all pick. Around.
Yeah. Well, we almost got all weepy.
Oh, that's a good just pick. Think, I am not kidding. Just and I yes, I cry at the end of every Parks and Rec episode, but just thinking about her deciding to like do bring joy because it starts with the guy finding the tin box.
Yeah.
And you're already, you know, you're feeling it. You're like, wow, this, it's coming. And then she sees him in the bar, and he's like just talking about, you know, life's funny. Oh, maybe I'll, you know, I know my daughter. Marry this. Oh, maybe I'll go talk to her. You're like, oh, here it comes. And then she just takes the blind man and takes him through the city on a tour. And it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that would be at the end of anything else. Mm-hmm. But that's in the first half hour of this.
Yeah. That is ballsy. All right. Damn. It's hard to follow that now. I feel like all our number ones are going to be disappointing.
So. Oh, no. Mine's good.
Okay. Well, my number one, my recap. Wow, I just noticed that a lot of these are, except for The Diving Bell and The Butterfly, they're all crime dramas. I just realized that.
Well, we know how much you love crime.
Yeah. The Diving Bell and The Butterfly, number five. Four, the crime drama, Read My Lips. Nine Queens, this is number three. Jealousy, number two. And number one, Kevin knows what this is, it's Band of Outsiders. It's, I love this movie. I just was talking to Brian with a why, and I don't think he's a fan of French New Wave. But it
he's not. I don't.
Jean-Luc Godard. And
I feel like he complains about him a lot.
Yeah. I love New Wave. I love it. I can't get enough of it. And this is one of my favorite movies, not only because it's a crime drama, but just it's, I don't know. I kind of, this is another girl who I kind of fell in love with. Like this, the girl in this Odile, I just really kind of, you know, from the first time I watched it, Khan fell in love with her, and the two characters too, like Frank, the older guy, the older criminal, and Arthur. Oh, I'm sorry, Arthur is the older criminal, and it's just in black and white. There's a ton of imperfections in this movie that make this movie what it is. Wait, I feel.
Kevin, you had this on your heist movie list, didn't you?
I did not.
No, I did.
Oh, so you're reusing it.
Yeah,
I'm reusing it. Okay. Sorry,
I got you. I see how it is. I still haven't seen it. I need to, though.
Is that veto worthy? Yeah. Reusing a title?
I'm not going to be. I haven't seen it, so I can't veto it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. I have it, so you could borrow it.
Sweet.
And I just, I don't know. I just, there's so many imperfections. There's a lot of editing errors that just
Wait, are they errors or are they on purpose, though? Because, I mean, in Breathless...
No, they're on purpose.
Okay.
They're on purpose.
Because he can, because he's French.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I noticed...
is it like Black Dynamite on purpose?
Dynamite! not
Wait,
that
can
bad.
I use that as my favorite foreign film?
Black Dynamite? Well, I don't understand the culture.
there's scenes where he does, like, he does, you see a scene, like, happen, like an action, like someone goes for the door, and then it cuts to a different angle, and they go for the door again. And I noticed that rewatching 25th Hour, Spike Lee does a lot in that movie.
They do the action movies do that a lot when it's like, oh, you're going to want to see this again.
Yeah.
And so it's like him flying from a car like three or four times. But maybe in that, I don't know. I can see that used to go to factory and just cut back.
It was more like in the dramatic purpose. Like there was one time where he gives a guy a hug and then like he goes for the hug and then they cut and then he does it again.
Well, Scorsese does that too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I love that. And I love that about Jean-Luc Godard. I dig it. I love it. Black and white. Well, not really endearing. Or
used it twice. I really have to see this movie.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, it's not as like I said, like, as, now I feel like Amelie should have been my number one. Like, I'm like, oh, fuck, now I'm
a sap. Well,
but I mean, what it's what it means to you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And, yeah, I love this movie.
Although, I am going to shame all of you for not having the movie that I have, because it's just ridiculous that you don't have this movie.
I think.
I'm keeping with the pretension.
Okay. I think I know where you're going.
Okay.
I don't know if you do.
Is
really?
It a, is
I know
it
where
a
he's going.
Shame we haven't seen it. It's not foreign. Never mind.
Kevin.
Okay, my recap. 5 was Old Boy. 4 was Wild Strawberries. 3, The Decalogue. 2, The Wages of Fear. And my number 1 is The Rules of the Game.
Kevin, you're just my go-to guy for picking up the movies that I wanted to put on my list.
I'm glad that I was here for you.
Yeah.
This movie is terrific. Just the way the characters interact with each other, the way that you can show... it's funny, it's dramatic, it has all those emotional elements in it. The way you can show rich people behaving like children. The way in one shot you can have several different character interactions and you have to kind of pay attention to what's going on in the foreground as well as what's going on in the background. And it's just how just one simple shot can be so complex. The way the Renoir tells the story is terrific. I don't know what else to say about this. It's just a really good, inspiring film that whenever I watch it, I say, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to have a shot where I have to worry about what I'm telling in the front, the foreground of the story, and how these two characters, and how if you're not paying attention to what's going on with those two characters, you may lose what's going on with their story. But it's just a really good, really fun, very dramatic film, and the ending is very bleak, but really good.
It's a wonderfully dense film.
It is.
There's so much. This is the movie that helped me appreciate Smiles of a Summer Night.
Okay.
Like, I got on this kick where it was Midsummer Night sex comedy. It was like reverse engineering. So watching Midsummer Night's sex comedy and then rewatching Smiles of a Summer Night and then watching Rules of the Game. But I watched Rules of the Game first. And I love this movie. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
The scene where they're doing, where they're entertaining each other, doing like the plays. Yes.
And then
the hunting scene is one of the most disturbing scenes I've ever seen in film. And it's so playful, but really dark and disturbing, because it's just them shooting animals.
It is just standing there waiting for the animals to come to them so that they shoot while they're having other people chase the animals out.
Yeah,
and they just
the
stand there. And, yeah,
yeah. It's so playful and so dark and so fun, and he's saying a lot about the upper class.
Yes, he is.
It's a great movie. Yeah, what Ricardo said.
Good pick. I have nothing to say. Yeah, I think you're the one who showed me this movie. I think you might have been. I think you
possibly
were. You own it, right? It's a Criterion you own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I borrowed your copy of it. Good pick. Damn, your number ones.
Okay,
give it to us, dude.
Sorry,
right now you've been talking a big game about this.
I know.
This has got to be good.
Okay, well, it's the List Film Podcast, so
I caught a glimpse, and it is. It's,
thank you. So my number 5 is Bed and Board. My number 4 is City of Lost Children. My number 3 is The Seventh Seal. Number 2, Elevator to the Gallows. And my number 1 is Cinema Paradiso.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boom. Gauntlet Throne.
All right.
Either version. Actually, I like the longer version better because I like the love story.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sap too. But seriously, what movie geek doesn't love this movie?
All right.
It's all about the love of cinema. I love it so much. I wish I could be the little kid hanging out in the movie theater, watching him cut the movies together and getting to see the movies before the preacher cuts out all the kisses. But that scene at the end where he watches all the kisses that he's cut together for him, where Alfredo's cut together for him, it's a great movie. Definitely a tearjerker at some points. So much fun.
You just brought it, dude. I was like, damn it. I was like, what did he put on the list? Like,
I'm glad that he put it on there because I kept going, okay, because this list was just a pain in the ass to do because there's so many films out there. I was like, well, what am I going to put on it? And I was like, well, I should probably put that on there, and I didn't put it on there.
I had a really tough time with this list.
I'm sure Brian Withwire was screaming, you idiot, Cinema Paradiso.
I feel like he's screaming about something
all the time.
Something we said about an hour ago that
he's probably still screaming about Prometheus.
Mispronouncing someone's name or some movie. Like, I mean, I'm sure he loves whatever Kevin has on his list because he usually agrees with Kevin's list completely, which, I mean, I'm sorry, Kevin, that
you have the same taste as
Brian. He's still upset that I said Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
He's definitely upset about that. He's like, that doesn't count to the Academy rules. It's not a foreign language film. It's just from England.
Divided by a pond, man.
We didn't say foreign language films for
this.
This
is true.
Just foreign films.
But I love this movie. Either version, it's great. It's about movies, watching movies, kids growing up, and love and movies, and I don't know what else to say.
Movies and a love story, and I'm there.
Yeah. And it's Italian.
Yeah.
It's a love triangle.
It is. It is. And Alfredo is great. Who doesn't want to be a kid hanging out with Alfredo watching movies all day? It's so much fun. And just seeing the progression, the way time passes in this little Italian village, it's great. It's such a fun, joyful celebration of like love and movies. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Well, Gauntlet Throne. I dig it. I was like, I didn't think you were going to deliver, and you delivered. I totally, yeah.
And for my number one, I don't even have a joke for something bad. Yeah.
What, Brennan, you have any honorable mentions?
I had a few honorable mentions. Or in other words, things that you couldn't figure out to replace another thing. Princess Mononoke.
Ooh.
I wanted to put in Miyazaki.
Yeah, I was
Princess Mononoke was the one I crossed out and put Man Bites Dog in its place.
Have we done animated?
We haven't.
So I feel like I was saving stuff for anime because I really wanted to have like Spirited Away. But I was like, I'll save that for later.
It would have been almost a tie between, it's more of a tie between My Neighbor Totoro and Princess Mononoke. But Princess Mononoke is the one that stands out for me for Miyazaki movies. What else did I have? I had The Killer, Battle Royale.
Yes.
Yes.
Downfall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel I'm going to say this, and then I feel like if someone who listens has enough time, they could make one of those little YouTube videos complaining about why I haven't seen it. I still haven't seen Downfall.
Oh, Downfall?
Yeah.
Oh, you want someone to do a Hiller complaining about Adam not seeing Downfall?
Hasn't seen Downfall. I haven't. I've seen the Hitler videos of him complaining about things, but I still haven't seen the movie.
I mean, it is great. He is awesome.
He's awesome.
Yeah. It is super
tense.
It's just
one of those things. Again, it's one of those like, all right, so am I in the mood to watch a movie about Hitler?
Yeah. I think you have to forget that. I think
it's like you don't really think of him as Hitler. Yeah. I mean, you do because he's acting very Hitler-y. But it's more just kind of sad. Like, this could be about like, God, this is going to sound pretty. It could be about like a broken down alcoholic or something. But it's just a guy at the end of his rope who happens to have the world at the end of his rope. And
a Nick Nolte type.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. he's Germany's Nick Nolte.
This movie kind of made me feel guilty, like for feeling bad for him.
Yeah, it's one of those things that adds dimension to a guy that you really didn't need any dimension to.
I know.
In the end, no, he was an asshole. I think we can all safely...
Yeah, fuck Hitler.
We didn't just have a level, you know... Yeah, Hitler was bad. But this... I would think he would enjoy this.
He would have liked this piece. He's like, you know
it's
what?
It's an interesting portrait of Hitler, is what you're saying?
It would be... They should put a sticker that says Hitler approved. I think he would approve.
I mean, the real evil... Like,
get tested, Hitler approved. Yeah.
Like, the guy who plays Goebbels, and, like, he's more terrifying than anybody.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Because he gives, you know, he gives the pills, you know, his wife and children. And
okay.
Spoiler alert, Hitler dies.
Dude. Why'd I just told you I haven't seen it.
Yeah, let's talk about the killer. The killer, I think changed, really blew me away.
Because the killer was before Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
Hard Boiled made it. Like, that's what made him.
Yeah.
But the killer is the one, I think, that's the more precise. Like, it's just, I have to go back. Like I said, I haven't seen it in so long, so it's hard for me to remember a lot of it. But just that one scene of the two guys holding the guns to each other, you know, the killer and the cop in the blind girl's apartment, that is, that I think John Woo, like, tries to repeat that scene every time a dove flies through the screen.
Or someone holds up two guns.
Or someone holds up two guns, or shit is just debris is blasting at you in slow motion or something. But, yeah, that, I just remember the killer being amazing.
Yeah, I remember being blown away, because I was just something like, oh, yeah, check this video. I'm like, all right, I put it in. And just being blown away. Like, when people talk about, like, oh, it's a belly of bullets, they're not fucking around. It's really, like, it's elegant. Like, he made violence really, really, he knows how to photograph violence really elegantly.
Well, yeah, and the killer's the one that has the shootout in the church at the end, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, he's not very subtle about it.
Yeah.
He does it well.
Yes, yes. So that's definitely one of the movies that definitely changed, blew me away.
That's another problem I was having as far as movies I haven't seen in a long time. Like, movies I remember loving, I just haven't seen them in forever. And so that's why a lot of stuff is honorable mention. It was difficult to make the list.
And the killer, I mean, as a 21st century person, the killer was hard to find. Like, had I gone down to Amoeba, I'm sure I could find it. But I can't get it anywhere. I can't get it anywhere digitally. I went to two different video stores in the area. They didn't have it. Like,
that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's on Criterion. Mm-hmm. Was that it for your honorable mention anymore?
Someone brought up a prophet.
Oh yeah,
and I can't believe I didn't at least think of a prophet.
Yeah,
which was amazing. The biggest takeaway, obviously, being that French prisoners get baguettes delivered daily.
yep.
Well, I'm going to give Brian with a Y something else to yell about. I still haven't seen it.
Oh, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, I like that director a lot. Like I said, I like that. I like. I really enjoyed the Beat My Heart Skipped. Yeah. It was really well done. And, of course, Read My Lips. He's awesome.
Who's the guy that plays the boss in A Prophet? The guy who plays the big guy in the prison? Because he was in something recently, and I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. I can't see him. I know who you're talking about. I can't picture
his
face.
He was awesome in something recently, but I just can't remember.
Was he in Ghost Protocol? Maybe? No. I don't think so. No.
Never mind. Anyway. Bad Daniel.
Some of my honorable mentions. Of course, The Killer. In the Mood for Love, I really enjoyed.
I remember really liking it, but it's been such a long time.
Yeah.
I actually thought it would be in your top five.
I know. And again, another still.
I feel like I like... Wait, that's Wong Kar-wai, right?
Yeah.
I think I like Chungking Express better.
I love Chungking.
I don't know. There's something about this movie that really... I think it's the score, too, and the cinematography. I don't know. But I like that, and I like Yojimbo. Dig it?
So. Yeah. Oh, Seven Samurai was also one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Anything Akira. You could really pick anything.
I had Rashomon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rashomon.
That was the first Akira Kurosawa I ever saw.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I loved it.
Toshirô Mifune is a badass.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin, what's some of your honorable mentions?
City of God.
Thank you.
Oh, see, I thought someone would pick City of God. That's why I didn't have it on the list.
Yeah, has anyone picked it for anything else before?
I bet everyone thought that same thing, though.
Yeah. We all, damn it. I blame Jenny. If she were here, she would have had it.
She would have had it on the list, yep. Ikaru, Tokyo Story, Cinema Paradiso, The Three Colors Red. Best of Youth, the only six-hour film that I've watched twice. Jules and Jim, The Conformist.
Okay, yeah. I got both of those.
I forgot to mention, because I had put it in my previous list, but Y Tu Moi Tambien. I think that is fucking...
Yeah, I was kind of surprised you didn't have that.
Well, because I knew I wanted to use Band of Outsiders, but I didn't want to do two, so...
Y Tu Moi Tambien,
love. Yeah.
Well, I love Y Tu Moi, but... Not as much as I love The Conformist.
Oh, The Conformist.
just the light and the visuals. I could just watch that movie on mute with the subtitles off. Just look at it. It's such a gorgeous movie to watch.
Nice. I'll say about Ichi Mama Tenbien, I saw that movie with my girlfriend at the time and my best friend.
Ooh.
So
that's rough.
Time comes, credits roll. No one really knows what to do.
The only creepier thing that if your girlfriend at the time would have just like reached for your hand, then reached for his hand. That got really creepy. Yeah, like like you have to talk about that scene like when you get out of the movie
theater.
If she
was funnier, then maybe that would have happened. That wasn't the case.
Okay, so The Exterminating Angel. You seen that one? I love that movie where it's a bunch of rich people. Again, it's very much like Rules of the Game. Rich upper class party, and they all get stuck, and they can't leave, and they don't know why. Like, no one can leave the party. And, like, people die.
I love that.
I love this movie so much. Diabolique, the original, obviously. Yes. Not the one with Chaz Palminteri. Martyrs, 2008. French horror movie. Amazing. Terribly disturbing. Oh, it's so good. Let the Right One In, Jules and Jim. Battle of Algiers, which I thought someone would have said.
Oh. I forgot about Battle of Algiers.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I really, I was also surprised that nobody mentioned anything by Pedro Almodovar.
I think I'm going to save that for, I'm saving that.
Our top five Almodovar movies.
Well,
I really, okay, but at the same time, I'm going to go with one that you might not expect. I love Volver because it reminds me, I love Mildred Pierce and it reminds me a lot of Mildred Pierce.
I did like Volver. I like all his movies. I haven't found one that I'm like,
so much fun.
Yeah.
And then Kevin mentioned this, Once Upon a Time, Children of Paradise, Metropolis, Nosferatu, Repulsion.
M was on mine also. I forgot about that one.
Okay. And the original The Vanishing. I love The Vanishing. Not going to lie, though, I kind of like the remake, too. Very different movies, but I love the 1988 version of The Vanishing.
Interesting.
It's amazing.
I just saw they released, like, on Variety or one of those magazines, some movie trades, that someone's making a movie, a really famous screenwriter, and they basically described it as Battle of Algiers in space. And I was like, what? My ears perked up, and I was like, what? Say again?
Wait, but what about Raging Bull 2 with John Forsythe?
It's happening, right?
Yes.
So before the podcast we were talking about, I went to a friend's bachelor party at a strip club, Sam Soft Brow in Los Angeles. The girl who...
Maybe they want to sponsor us this podcast.
Sam Soft Brow, wonderful place, lovely ladies. Enjoy myself if you're out there. I know that's painting a really weird picture of me. This is the first time I've been to a strip club in a long time without a lot of drugs.
Just thinking, what if like... 6 months from now, we're like,
we're live here from us.
And it's like in the background, yes, Jenny, stage two, Jenny.
If you can guess the next movie that they list on the List Film Podcast, you get a free lap dance over in the corner from Daisy.
Yeah.
But this actually is going somewhere. A friend of his bought him a table dance where they dance on the table. And the DJs, he said, okay, and here's coming Charlene. And you can see her coming up in Raging Bull 2.
What?
So I know one of the ladies who's going to be in Raging Bull 2. I don't know what part she plays.
Is she a good actress?
Yes. They're all good actresses. They're all great actresses.
Yeah.
She made you seem like she was really interested in you?
She did not. Well, the other one did, but not her. But yeah, they're all great. Come on. They're all great actresses. Everyone believes it. For that 5 minutes.
Was this group of people that you went with all guys or was it
mixed? No, it was guys and girls.
No, okay. Isn't your girlfriend the one who set up everything?
Yeah, she found it and everything.
Nice.
So there you go.
Now, is it going to be called Raging Bull 2?
That's what was on the interwebs today.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's him. Who else is in it? Chaz Palminteri. No, Joe Mantegna. Natasha Henstridge.
Yep.
Penelope Ann Miller.
Yep.
It's a weird... It is like...
And some dude I've never heard of.
Who directed
Martin,
this?
Martin, not Scorsese.
Yeah, Scorsese. Someone asked Scorsese about it, and what?
He's like, who?
That was his quote.
What are you talking about?
What?
They made a part two?
Yeah, and it's Jake. Yeah, and even the synopsis didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's what we're talking about, like, it's splashing. It's John Forsythe playing old Jake LaMotta and someone playing young Jake LaMotta. So it's flashing back again, but it's two different people this time instead of one person aging themselves.
And the press release kept mentioning the book. Like someone wrote a book, Raging Bull 2.
Okay.
This is like the book.
Or it's like a musical. Like he's mentioning the script but calling it a book. Like it came from the stage or something. I don't know what it is.
Weird.
But the best is the Photoshop picture of the person with his knuckles up.
Yeah.
It's from American Me, the picture. Oh man, this is horrible news. I thought it was a joke.
It's from The Rock.
I thought it was a joke.
It's a picture of him from The Rock. Sorry, microphone. I had to put my dukes up.
That's true. He's like, put up your dukes. I should have had my the one I didn't mention was JCVD. I really love that movie.
That was one that I kept hearing the hype about, and then I watched it, and then that scene comes where it's just him unloading. And
I cried.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I totally get. You know, it's rare that you know something is hyped up that much and then it actually delivers. And like, yeah, you cry.
I didn't. I saw it in theaters and I didn't hear any hype. I just like this movie, Van Damme. Like it's in theaters, not straight to DVD. Then I'll go see it. So I went to go see it, and that part comes, and he gets elevated.
Yeah.
And then he starts going, and I'm like, oh, no, not here, not now.
There's something really weird about being a dude by yourself in a movie called JCVD, crying at a Jean-Claude Van Damme soliloquy.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm crying right now, and I'm by myself in this movie theater.
But before that, they gave you the appetizer of the long credit sequence where it's just him fighting through the set of the movie, which was great. The movie, I don't think, really holds up to those two scenes, like, as a whole. I mean, I thought the movie was good, but it just those two things just stand out as amazing sequences.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I love it in general. I do, too. I love the scene in the limo where he's complaining about, oh, they went with Steven Seagal?
Yes. Right. He's going to cut off his
ponytail?
And I really enjoy another scene that made me really emotional is when the taxi driver is scolding the lady taxi driver is scolding him, and it's just a shot on him, and he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. And he's like, you know, you come back and we still love you and blah blah, even after the crappy movies. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. And like, you could just, I was like so hurt and like, just told her shut the fuck up. And it just it was really painful to watch.
All I'm gonna say is I can't wait for Expendables 2.
I'm ready. I'm a fan. I don't care how shitty and cheesy.
And Brian with the Y can yell at the whatever he's listening to on this. I like Expendables.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do too. Should make it a mandate.
It's on Instant.
Oh, have you watched the documentary? That's on Instant too. It's really cool. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm. I need to watch it.
About the Expendables?
Yeah. About the making of. It's like an hour and a half long documentary, maybe two. And it's about how like he like really kind of like abused his body. And,
yeah,
like,
don't they talk about when he breaks his, when he broke his neck, right? Or his back.
His back.
Yeah, his back.
I don't think it was his neck, but his back.
And he's like 65.
And he keeps doing the film, and they're like, can't go back.
You have to stop shooting.
Right now. We have to go to surgery like tomorrow. And he's like, I got to finish this movie. And he flies back, and he finishes the movie.
Even Jackie Chan like recently came out and was like, no, I'm old. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, so he's not going to be in Expendables 3?
No, I doubt it.
God damn it.
People, okay, who do you want in Expendables 3? I want Steven Seagal.
Yeah, Steven Seagal has to come in. I just bought my dad Seagology for Father's Day.
Seagology.
Sounds like a good cologne.
It's great. No. It's by this guy, Vern. He writes a lot for AntCoolNews.com and has his own website. He does a lot of film writing, and he keeps updating it. So it's all essays about Steven Seagal movies, about each movie and different ones about him. And he keeps updating it with all the new like releases of Seagal movies. And it's great. I highly recommend it.
Him running over the dog with the tank?
No, for Lawman.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Arpaio, the sheriff.
Anyway, Expendables 3, I want Wesley Snipes.
Ooh.
Nice.
Who else?
Steven Seagal.
Billy Drago's in this one, isn't he? If he's not, then he should be in the next one.
What about Christopher Lambert?
I don't think him as an action guy. But anyway, so that's
Keith,
it, right?
David.
Ooh, that'd be cool as like a general.
Keith David and David Keith. I want them both.
Well, anyway, that's our dream
Oh, and Louis Gossett Jr.
A Dreamcast. Yes. Billy Zapka.
And Mel Gibson.
And
Danny Glover. And Joe Pesci.
And why not Mel Gibson?
Cynthia Rothrock. Anyone? Yeah. No one? Anyone? No one knows Cynthia Rothrock?
No. No.
Lady. She's a lady martial arts movie star.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What about the guy from that movie, A Perfect Weapon? Yeah. Anyway, Michael Dudikoff. Yes.
There we go. And Billy Blanks.
David Bradley.
Billy Blanks.
David Bradley. Anyway, well, this has gone on.
We're going on way long.
All right. So you can find this on the website, thelistfilmpodcast.com, all the links, all that stuff. Where can they find you, Brandon?
Oh, I didn't expect that.
Are you on the Twitter?
BL Bennett on Twitter. You can go to, I think I have links, giantinvisiblerabbit.com.
He writes for Shooting the Script sometimes also. Yeah. ShootingTheScript.com.
ShootingTheScript.com.
And you could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at An Adam Scott, AN_Adam Scott.
And I'm at K Zuberbeer, that's ZUBERBIER.
There you go.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming down and hanging out with us, drinking some beers. And that's it for this pretentious episode. And I hope you had fun. Have a good week.